Thank you very much. And let's proceed with our meeting, and we offer the floor to Mr. Mikhail Shamolin, Vice President of the company, Head of Business Unit Russia.
Good morning, yet, ladies and gentlemen. Let me say a few words about overall marketing and operation strategy in Russia. Let me start with reminding you what happened this year organizationally with MTS overall and how the business unit Russia was created. On this slide, you see the organizational structure as it is and the division of responsibilities between the group and the business unit level. And as you see, the business unit level, primarily responsibility number one is P&L, also development of local markets and operational management. This change in the organization happened very quickly, was finished in August of 2006. As a result, we did not get any increase in personnel. We did not get any increase in management cost. And we arrived to a standardized model which could in the future encompass new business units and operate them in the same way that the existing business units are being operated. Now, let me move to the revenue growth forecast and revenue growth drivers as we understand them for 2007. We believe that two-thirds of the market growth in 2007 would come from existing customer base, existing customer bases of existing operators. And one-third will still come from the new subscribers. As you know, the penetration level in Russia, according to official statistics based on the SIM card sales, is over 100%, and we'll reach even higher numbers in 2007. But of course, this is not the real penetration, which we estimate currently at the level of around 70%, and we believe that there is still room for growth. But again, the major growth is now going to come from existing customer base, and this is why the focus in our strategy and marketing activities would be primarily on retaining and developing and harvesting the existing customers that we've got. VAS revenue in Russia, we believe, is going to grow faster than the voice revenue. And in 2007, it will grow at about 17% level as compared to 2006. So what are the strategic goals of MTS in Russia? There are basically four. The primary goal, number one, is maintaining the overall revenue leadership in 2007. Alongside with the revenue leadership, we set forth a goal for ourselves to continue with a strong financial performance. And to achieve the goal, we plan to continue the cost savings achieved in 2006 into 2007. And as Leonid mentioned, we would be working on further increase of efficiency of our operations and keeping costs under control. Thus, our OBDA margin in Russia will be sufficient in 2007 to support the group OBDA target. We do not disclose the guidance for the specific guidance for OBDA margin in Russia, but this is what we would like to say. And we will have further improved cash flow as compared to 2006. We also would like to do a lot more in our brand perception and customer loyalty. As you know, we've had a rebranding effort in 2006, which has been quite successful according to our research. Figures on brand perception and loyalty have been increasing throughout the year, but this year we have an even more dramatic target in front of us to improve our brand. And we, because we believe that the business is as good as the employees and the organization is, we would like to become a leading company in employee management and employee relations, and the target for this is to join 10 key employers in Russia. On the revenue guidance side, we see our revenue growing at least as fast as the market growth. Of course, this will not be easy because we have negative factors facing us, and those factors include market saturation. They include increased competition from local players, which are very aggressive on pricing, and they've been chipping out market share from major players in the end of 2006. We have inflation level on across pretty much all the costs of the company, which is higher than the tariff growth and the ARPU growth, and we have a challenge to once again keep costs under control. And of course, interconnect economy with the changes that happened in 2006 puts a pressure on OIBDA margin of 2007 because, as you know, interconnect is has generated additional revenue, but it's a much lower margin business than our core business in voice and VAS. This will be offset by increased efficiency of our operations, by tight purchase control policy. We have achieved a lot in that, and we're planning to do more in 2007. We're planning to further reduce personnel, and again, the goal is not to reduce personnel itself, but to increase the efficiency of operations and business processes. We would like to do more with less people, and we will maintain the revenue sharing principle in our dealer commissions, which was introduced in the beginning of 2006 and has proven to be very successful in both keeping the cost under control and also improving the quality of new subscribers that are attracted through dealers' networks. If we go into more detail on the revenue simulation, we're basically planning to do key four things to achieve the revenue stimulation goal. First and foremost is existing customers' retention and the ARPU growth. We have aggressive targets to reduce churn figures in front of us. We will do that by implementing full-scale CRM system and introducing loyalty programs. We will balance our tariffs in such a way that we optimize usage while maintaining ARPU and growing ARPU. And we have a segment approach in this, which will be further elaborated on by Garrett Johnson, Russia's CMO. But the basic idea is that we do not plan to compete on price across the board across all customers by simply offering new tariffs for everyone with low price, but we would be offering segments and we have identified and researched those segments for ourselves. We will be offering segments tariff structures which would be advantageous for the usage profile of each particular segment, but will maintain acceptable to us level of APPM. We've been doing this in 2006, and we have seen that this strategy works, can be successful, and we will continue with that in 2007. So, as I said, we will be increasing our efforts to simulate the growth in traffic. We see that there is a large potential in growth. The usage in Russia as compared to usage in Western Europe and even in Eastern Europe is still low, and given the growth in GDP and people's incomes, we see this usage increasing in 2007. Roaming relations, we have a lot to do on this front. We don't believe that we have sufficient market share in roaming, and we will be making efforts to increase our market share there. On the evaluated services, we have grown substantially in 2006 on this front. So in 2007, we will increase the number of services, and Pavel Roidberg, our director of product development, will talk more about this. We will make the use of those products more convenient. Like this year, we have implemented a number of technologies that allow people to receive GPRS and WAP settings on their phones over the air, so you don't have to call the call center anymore and talk for half an hour with an operator to figure out how to set up your phone to use GPRS and internet. And of course, we will participate in the development of 3G as licenses and frequencies become available on the market. Level number three is new customers attraction. This market, despite the penetration figures that you've heard and despite our forecast on growth of revenue from the existing customer base, the attraction of new customers becomes a priority because, as you know, and you have seen from statistics, the churn of existing operators is still quite high. About 25 to 27% of the customer base of all major operators is still migrating between operators and looking for the best deal and for the best operator. And if you simply multiply the figures, you will see that about 30 million customers are coming to the market just from the churn. And of course, we are planning to participate in this game, and we will have a line of products, and we will have new promotions, and we have it planned in our marketing strategy to take our fair share in the new customers. And of course, we see that the amount of customers that are fluctuating between operators is going to be decreasing as customers sort of settle down and get the user profile offers that they like best. And of course, the CPP and the fact that people can now receive free incoming calls to their phone numbers make the phone number more valuable than it used to be. New customers attraction is an important priority. And for that, we will improve our own sales network. We are also planning to make it more economically efficient. We're spinning it out in a separate business unit, which may potentially even become a separate company with its own P&L and targets on both revenue and cost reduction side. This will also help us counteract some negative developments on the dealer consolidation front, because as dealers consolidate, they put additional pressure on operators. We will continue developing our dealer network, especially going into small cities and villages. We will use, as I said, a segmented approach in marketing. On the new services, we will introduce several new products which will be converging fixed and mobile, and we will leverage our relationships and synergies within the Sistema Group. This will also happen for private customers and business customers. On the cost control side, we will continue with our dealer commission policy, which is based on the revenue sharing, which means that we can attract low ARPU customers cost efficiently and have them profitable for us. We will further improve our payment systems. This year we have introduced our own payment systems, and now our payment partners can choose whether to switch to one of the intermediate payment system, independent payment systems, or to switch to an MTS payment system, which is more cost efficient for us and in many cases more cost efficient for the partners. So we will be developing that. On the staff reduction side, we will look further into optimizing our business processes. We are continuously doing the activity value analysis, and we are scrutinizing what we do and how we do it, and what is necessary and what is not, and that also helps us increase our efficiency. We will do more outsourcing where it's cost efficient, and we will use our dealer network for customer service, thus reducing our customer service expenses. On the interconnect policy, we will continue to look into the tariff structure, and we have plans to make it more optimal, sort of to increase the marginality of interconnect P&L. And we have a plan to control costs in the regions as well. And Leonid mentioned about our plans to consolidate macro regions. We have already consolidated two in the end of 2006, and we're planning to do more on that front in 2007, which which will also contribute to our overall cost reduction efforts. On the customer service improvement, first and foremost, we are looking into strengthening of our CRM and churn prediction activities. A part of our CRM effort would be an increase in quality in our call centers. This year, I mean, if you remember, in 2005, we've had about 52 call centers, which was the legacy of the mergers and acquisitions we've done and our growth in previous years. And we have made a dramatic effort in the end of 2005 and 2006 to consolidate those 52 into only 10 call centers. So each market region has its own call center. And we have managed to achieve a dramatic improvement in performance of those call centers, both cost-wise and service-wise. And now our key call center indicators are in line with best international practices. And for the year of 2007, we plan to further increase the efficiency of these operations while maintaining the quality service that has been achieved. We will do that also through differentiation of services in those centers, and that means that our high-value customers will receive faster and better service, and our sort of low ARPU customers would benefit from automated channels and improved IVR systems, which we're also working on. As you know, one of the key criteria to choose an operator and to remain with the operator is network quality and billing quality. And we are, as you know, securing further investment into improvement of network infrastructure and further optimization. And also on the billing side, as Sergei Aslanyan has mentioned, we're planning to harmonize our ION platforms and reduce the number of ION suppliers, so we have more commonality and standardization in that, and also more services on the billing side would be moved to online as opposed to offline. Sort of service network will also be improved. We will have we are planning to have at least one point of payment for 1,000 citizens in 2007. And in 2006, we've had about 1 point per 2,500. We would provide more services in dealers' outlets, and we will further develop our exclusive dealers network, which would basically have an MTS brand. We'll sell MTS and provide MTS services, just as MTS offices are currently doing. And that is it on Russia. And let me move the next presentation to Mr. Gareth Johnson, who is the CMO Russia.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Gareth. I'm here to tell you about the market. I would like basically to divide my presentation into three parts. I'm going to first of all talk about why this environment is interesting, why it's a good environment to be in. Location, 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 as the real estate people say. That's why it's a good environment. I'm going to talk about how we understand that environment and the kind of opportunities that it develops for us. Which of those opportunities we see as priorities, how we execute against those opportunities in our strategy, what are the lessons we learn and our expectations going forward. Starting out with the environment, I mean, it's a very good environment for any mobile operator to be in. I mean, pretty much all of the key demand-driving leading indicators are very, very positive here in Russia. Starting out, obviously, with the high economic growth and the economic convergence we're seeing in terms of Russia converging gradually but steadily with Western and Central European income and growth levels. The region, the market is regionally disaggregated, i.e., you have a different, you have 89 regions here in Russia in which we operate in over 80 of those. In each of those regions, there's a separate competitive and pricing situation. So imagine in the US, if you had one set of prices in New York and a different set of prices in Oklahoma and a different set of prices in Washington State. Here in Russia, there we operate in markets with 82 different sets of prices. But that also presents opportunities. The population is remarkably homogenous. If I take a customer from the very furthest Pacific reaches of Russia and I compare him with somebody from Kaliningrad in the very furthest western reaches of Russia, the differences are negligible, not even in terms of regional accents. So the consumer situation here, remarkably homogenous. Very low landline penetration, which creates its own opportunities, and the fixed network, relatively unsophisticated in terms of its ability to scale up to the challenges of differentiation represented by an increasingly service-rich mobile platform. And the mobile penetration, although it is high here in Russia, as my colleagues have referred to, it's by no means complete. And consumption levels remain extremely low. CPP, that is the introduction of calling party pays since the 1st of July last year, means the final democratization of the mobile market. What that means is that if you're an unemployed labourer somewhere in the central reaches of Russia and you don't have any money at all to make outgoing calls, you can still take lots of incoming calls and we can still make lots of money from you, and that's true for all operators. At the same time here in Russia, alongside the growing income levels, consumer expectations are growing, both in terms of how brands deliver on their promises, as well as in terms of general quality of service, speed of response, and so on, which is good for us, I think. And that is also combined. The story that one often hears about Russia when one looks from the West is that Russia is a natural resource-driven economy, and that may well still be true, but what we see at micro level, the feedback we get from our small business sales teams and so on, is that the knowledge economy in Russia, that is the portion of the economy which earns its money not based on the riches of the ground on which it sits, but on what it knows and how it employs, packages and sells that knowledge into global markets, is growing exponentially. And we see that at micro level very strongly. That's also very positive for us. And finally, the legal and regulatory situation, it can only get better. And that is also good for every operator, I think. I won't dwell too much on our performance. I'll probably come back to it when I talk about our strategy. But what I can say, the key things that have helped us to further increase our performance in 2006 financial year have been our ability to generate ever higher traffic volumes without cutting the prices too much, to put it simply. We have also steadily increased our customer numbers, and our lifestyle segmentation products, that is the first round of those that we've released onto the market, have certainly struck a chord in terms of consumer demand as the extra customer numbers bear out. If we look at the ARPU dynamic for 2005-2006, I don't want to dwell too much, guys, today on the numbers. I want to tell you more about where those numbers are going to come from and what's the philosophy that's going to drive us forward for market success. But to give this number, we have been successful in driving ARPU on a continuous upward trend in 2006, and we've managed to get ARPU back to the same level, that is revenue per single subscriber, where we're at the end of 2005. Which, given the massive increase in our customer base that's taken place since then and the impact of CPP, I think is a result that we're reasonably happy with. If I look at the opportunities that this Russian environment presents for us in terms of the market, I mean, obviously, the first thing is high economic growth, because that high economic growth is going to translate into disproportionately high increased demand for mobile services. And the main reason for that is that the vast majority of those Russians who currently have a phone in their pockets have only had it for the last 18 to 24 months and haven't really learned how to use it yet. So those increases in disposable income are going to translate into disproportionate usage and revenue increases. High potential services out there, if I look long term, the big long term revenue generator for this company is going to be, and in fact our business model, is going to be mobile internet access. Access to an internet at high speeds, speeds comparable to what you see today when you sit at home with a broadband connection in Moscow, but with a vastly expanded internet. So, for example, people sending films from one phone to another while they're coming home on the underground train, a full film. Landline replacement in the cities. I mentioned earlier the landline operators have not been uniformly excellent in terms of how they have translated their strategies into customer service improvements and customer-relevant products and services. So we believe there's a big, obviously there's a generic component to landline replacement in that everywhere in the world it's more convenient to call somebody's pocket than to call their bedroom table. But apart from that, here in Russia there's an extra component of potential value accretion based on the fact that the landline operators have not, in general, skilled up with high-value broadband initiatives in order to compete with the mobile offerings. And obviously, we put a lot of stress on learning from peers and from other operators. In fact, what I can say is that, you know, if you guys find a service somewhere in the world, for example in Paraguay, and you say, Garrett, how come MCS isn't doing that service? We won't say, because we don't know. We'll say, we've looked at it, we've analyzed it, we've done the numbers, and it doesn't make sense. Or, it doesn't make sense yet. But we have people who look at every single one of the 1,866 operators around the world, and they tell us what's cool and what's not cool, what's segment relevant and what's not segment relevant, pretty much on a daily basis. So we believe that most of the wheels that can be invented have already been invented somewhere else. It's just a question of picking the things that are cool and relevant, bringing them into this market. And this market is very open, we believe, for many, many kinds of new things. There are a lot of underserved segments. Rural customers in general are underserved. But look at the demographics, people who are very young, you know, children in school. My 7-year-old back in Ireland, she's the only one in the class of 36 that doesn't have a phone. I go and visit the schools here, and even in Moscow, which is high income, you know, way away from that still. So the child market, big opportunities. The pensioner market, also big opportunities. Massively underserved. A lot of those guys don't even have fixed lines, but their families in the Russian culture look after them. Big opportunities. Corporate account debt. Typical situation in the West. A cinema has 50 employees. 48 of them have a phone provided by the cinema, including the cleaning lady. Here in Russia, a company has 10,000 employees. 50 of them have a phone. And my question is, what about the other 9,950? So big opportunities. Small business. Only, depending on who you believe, somewhere between 14 and 21% of national GDP, versus back in my own country of Ireland, 60 to 70%. So, you know, small business, we see the growth levels in terms of the overall corporate segment there, you know, way ahead of you know, corporate in general. Big opportunities there. But maybe the biggest one of all, you know, the ability to say to a customer that what we give you as MTS is not based on our products or our factory, because you don't care about that. What we give you as MTS is based on who you are. What's your lifestyle? If you're an immigrant from Tajikistan and you've come here to Moscow to work on the buildings, you know, what you want is cheap calls to Tajikistan plus a group service to call your mates here in Moscow. And you want it in your language, and you want customer service in Tajik when you call the call centre. That's what segmented offering is all about. And there's a big demand stimulation opportunity there because nobody is doing this in the market. So it's a small example of segmentation. Russia, generally speaking, is a low-trust culture. And brand loyalty, I would say, is not distinguished by its high presence. That is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity to create a brand that people will buy even when the service mix is not optimized for them, and will definitely buy if the service mix is optimized for them. And those low consumption numbers, I'll give you two examples. Back in, I think Liam had referred to this earlier on, you know, back in Ireland we see hundreds and hundreds of minutes of usage per month from, you know, from an average customer, voice minutes, incoming and outgoing. And here in Russia we see, you know, a fraction of that. And I know the Irish have a reputation for being talkative, but, you know, the Russians are, I would say, as a social observation, not less so. But we don't see that behavioural map transfer to the telephone. So people can talk all day about, you know, high value, high content services and so on. But at the end of the day, you know, the stage this market's at, what we really need to be about, apart from anything else, is just getting people to talk more and gain greater utility from a device that can give them that greater utility. Talk more, send more SMSs. SMS, I'll take the average for the three big operators, roughly 10, 11 SMSs per month per customer. You know, back in Western Europe, it's 60 to 70. In the Philippines and Indonesia, it's in the 300-400s per month. So, you know, obviously big opportunities there as well. And I'm not talking rocket science products here. I'm talking things that are very basic. And we're going to take those opportunities. So my priorities. Obviously, as my colleagues have already said, widen the revenue leadership. And widen it with respect to the other big operators here in the Russia space. So in other words, Russia presents great opportunities. What we're saying to you this morning is that we're going to do more with those opportunities than our competitors by spotting them, prioritizing them right, and executing against them in the most efficient way. That will be supported by having the most loved and respected brand nationwide, and we're not there yet, but we have a plan to get us there. And you know, the backdrop to that is obviously to do that in a way which allows us to exceed the benchmarks in terms of operational efficiency and effectiveness that have been created by our peers, both here in Russia and in other countries. Our drivers, if I get a bit mechanical here and talk about what are the drivers that help us to do that, you know, first and foremost, it's retaining the customer base we have. The Russian penetration is high. Most customers have been spoken for already by one of the operators. You know, our job is to hang on to the customers that we have, but it's not just a question of hanging on to them, it's also a question of making them more loyal. So that even if I have a customer on a tariff plan 13 and, you know, Beeline or Megaphone come out with something that, you know, based on a pure per minute calculation, is probably, he's probably better off to go for that, he will stay with me for other reasons. So I generate his loyalty. So, in other words, the precondition for his retention, or one of the preconditions, volume, consumption. Those consumption numbers, you know, we need to, and we will get them up. The mix of services. What we see is that, you know, people who, you know, it's a very narrow mix. The degree of heterogeneity, if you will, of service consumption is very small here in Russia. And again, I speak for all three operators. You know, people who use voice tend to use voice and a little bit of other things. We don't see this widening and flattening of the consumption map that we see and have seen in places like the Czech Republic, Hungary, even Turkey. And obvious opportunity and driver for us there. Acquisition. I mentioned that there are lots of customers out there that haven't been spoken for yet. The kids, the pensioners, the immigrants, the rural population. But there are also customers, you know, millions and millions of them, who are with Beeline and with Megaphone, and they're there because they're there by default because their mum and dad went there. But CPP has only been in Russia since the 1st of July, and there's still a year or two in the market where we can convince people to drop the phone number and move without significant personal, you know, inconvenience, because that phone number culture, the phone number has only been around since the 1st of July. The average working man on the street, who before the 1st of July would see a better offer, chuck the SIM card and go for something else because the phone number was expensive for incoming calls, that's changing now. We still have, you know, a year or two before the dust settles and people become very attached to those phone numbers, and I'm precluding here MNP. But that means there's still, you know, the market is still very available for mass acquisition in this zero-sum game scenario from other operators. And then finally, the dependency. You know, the more we can get people to consume, the more heterogeneity we can get people to consume, and the more they like the brand, the more the dependency increases, and the more the dependency increases, the more the dependency of other customers increases. You get a virtuous circle of what we call economies of scope. The more people there are to call, and the more people you regularly call, the bigger the market for everybody. Our strategy, how are we going to execute against these opportunities that we see in the market? First and foremost, it's about segmentation. It's about regionalization, because the reality of the Russian market is that it's 82 regions. It's about consumption facilitation, about making it easy to consume, about making extra consumption the line of least resistance for a customer. And it's about maximizing that consumption. It's also about demand creation, so getting people to buy things they never even knew they needed. And finally, it's about sustainable differentiation, that there is a look and feel and smell to what we do that is very distinctive and very relevant for the vast majority of customers, both ourselves and others, our own customers and other people's customers that we talk to. To talk about segmentation, what do we mean by that? Because it's a word, I think, that's often bandied around by business school textbooks, and it's seen as a panacea, but we have a very concrete vision of what segmentation is all about. We believe that first and foremost, the segmentation is based around lifestyle. Are you a youth or a young at heart person, you know, even a 40-year-old with a Harley Davidson who wants to be 21 again? Are you a family member, a child, a parent of a parent? Are you a mass market, you know, blue-collar adult? Are you a small businessman? Are you a corporate customer? Are you an immigrant? And that's just the main segment clusters. There are also secondary ones. What about the value of those customers? Because in each of those segments, we have obviously people who have high value contribution to make, both in terms of revenue, as well as in terms of net marginal contribution per customer, medium and low. But even the low contribution, the low value customers, have high upside potential. So that's the thing that the stage this market is at is very nice, because even the low values are still worth focusing on, because you can get so much more out of them by focusing on demand creation. The geographic segmentation, region X, region Y, there's a big opportunity to optimize revenues because, you know, the prices in each region to a large extent correlate with the income levels in each region. So although it's inconvenient to do a business case for each product 82 times when we bring something out to market, on the other hand, it's very good because if I take the US example again, imagine Verizon could charge 3 times in New York for a minute of traffic what it charges in, you know, Alabama. Nice, you know, it's total optimization. So that's a good thing. So what I'm saying to you here, if I take a youth customer and he's in Yaroslavl in that region and he's a medium value, I have a program for him. If he's a mass market customer and he's in Vladivostok and he's high value, I have a program for him. But that's not all. If I take it down to the level of an individual customer, so I go beyond the segments and I look at the customer of one, And I look at what we call his consumption signature. So let's take the youth from Yaroslavl, who's low value. And he consumes mainly voice, but he never does any texting. And he's only ever used the internet once. Then I have a little present coming for him over the air, which says, hey, low value youth in Yaroslavl region, I have a proposal for you which is relevant to the price levels in Yaroslavl. It's relevant for your lifestyle as a young person, because we know in general what you like and do, 80-20 rule. And it's relevant to your current consumption package. Here's 50 SMS for free. Try them out. And it's just for him. And the guy sitting next to him, who is a medium value customer who already consumes text, will give him something else. That's what segmentation is all about. Regionalization. Now, I mean, there are many different kinds of regions. 82. There are regions where we go from being absolute leader right down to being a complete outsider who arrived in the region, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we have one base station. Those regions also have varying regional economic potential. Before you get worried, I'd like to say that the regions where we are strong correlate very positively with the regions that have the highest growth and income levels. But there are regions where we're outsiders. They tend to be outsider regions, you know, obviously, but they're there. And the competitor activity differs by region. It's historically mandated. Some regions we have Megaphone, some regions we have Beeline, some regions we have both, some regions we have a strong local operator, as my colleague Mr. Shamulin referred to, and so on. So we have to make sure that we optimize that, you know, federal, national strategy. I talked about homogenous consumers. We've the same Russian muzhik, you know, pretty much across the country. And that's true. But there is this regional aspect, and by taking it into account and combining it with the lifestyle segmentation, combining it with the consumption signature accuracy of placement, and combining that with the value that we see from each customer, both potential and actual, we get a pretty complete picture of a customer. And I can say to you with some confidence that segmentation model, where it's presented in London or in New York, would be, you know, right up there with what the operators there are doing. So in no way are we compromising on marketing standards and looking at Russia as anything else than a first world country with very developed and very sophisticated consumer expectations. Consumption facilitation and expansion. Obviously, we're looking for more active customers. We've been pretty successful last year in, you know, significantly increasing the portion of our customer base which has made at least one chargeable event in the previous 30 days. We want to do higher volume consumption by upselling. So, for example, you know, you're a businessman who makes two calls to Poland every month, and you spend $5. We might offer you, you know, 25 minutes a month to Poland without having to pay five times the price. So we get you to consume more of the same things. I talked about segment affinity consumption. You know, young people like texting. They don't like internet access yet, but they do love text. So we need to work with that. So all about segment affinity, getting the packages right for the segments, but also the heterogeneity, the opportunity I spoke about earlier, that, you know, people don't consume a very wide mix of services. But if a guy is doing voice and you start to get him doing text, he's going to do even more voice because there's a self enhancing nature to texting and voicing. They're interdependent, and we can get the consumption up. And then finally, we make it easier for default consumption. Somebody hits zero on their account, and they still really need to call somebody. We can give them a reverse charge call. We can have the friend call them back. We can give them a microcredit, Bangladeshi style, so they can go $2 into minus. We give them the trust, the same trust that we're looking for from them. We give to them, and so on. So make it easier to consume by default. The challenges we face in executing against all of this wonderful stuff. First of all, the competition. Now, the competition is a challenge and an opportunity. The competition is great because the competition is tough, and the competition never lets us sleep even for a second. But we believe that there is a single-mindedness and a logic to our marketing philosophy which will allow us to more than stand our ground against the competition. In general, I would say the effect of the competition is beneficial for us. Regulatory, there are obvious challenges coming down the road in terms of mobile number portability and so on. But also, the regulatory environment is improving in terms of its transparency, in terms of its forecastability and predictability, and in terms of its logical, positive correlation to the business environment. So that's good for us. User education is a big thing, and I'll give you a small example of this. And maybe it goes back to the days when, you know, Russia was a police state, or the Soviet Union was a police state. What we notice in the West, you know, if we take the top three calling destinations for the average guy in the street, you know, it's like 25 to 35% of traffic. Here in Russia, it's like 80%. So if I could just get, one of my customers to start calling his 5 or 10 best mates instead of his 3 best mates. But I need to educate him to do that. He needs to be educated to the fact that, making calls is quite normal. And that takes me to another example. Somebody in Russia forgets their phone at home and they walk to the bus stop and they, oh no, I've forgotten my phone. And then we interview them and we say, hey, would you walk back home to get your phone given that you've forgotten it? We have seen a very positive evolution of that trend over the last 12 months. So there's a number of Russians who say, I would walk back home to get my phone because it's important to my life, is going up and up and up. And that can be only good for us because this is the kind of behavior and the kind of education, not just about advanced services, but about how to use your phone, how to make it enhance your quality of life, how to be happier. That's what we want to get. Because guys, at the end of the day, what is the one thing that all highly profitable companies have in common? They give pleasure to their customers and they do it again and again and again. And, at the end of the day, bar to shouting, that's where we want to get to. Thanks.
Pavel Roydberg.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Pavel Roydberg and I lead the value-added services team at MTS. Let me please start with kind of comparing the situation on the international market from the perspective of value-added services, ARPU, and percentage of value-added services as the total ARPU. As you look at this map, you see that our mature markets like Ukraine and Russia are doing pretty well in terms of percentages. We are kind of beating the U.S. and we are in mid-range of Europe, but we are still doing not so well in the total ARPU, ARPU from value-added services. When you look at Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan, we are pretty much at entry level yet, and we have a lot of room for improvement, and Belarus is somewhere in the middle as expected. Now, if we compare what led to this picture, mature international markets, first of all, we are talking about high incomes comparing to MTS footprint. We are talking about the situation when operators realized the importance of value-added services around the year 2000 and started to build their portfolio, started to promote this portfolio. In Russia, we started to focus on it pretty much from 2005. There is a difference in business model as well, where in Europe and in the U.S., operators subsidize the handsets, and as such, they control the handset market. In Russia, handset market is pretty much independent from the operator. We don't control it. So when we launch new services, we really need to look at variety of handsets and go with mainstream technologies to make sure that we get to significant penetrations. If you look at our progression from the timing angle and talk about 2006, 2007, and 2008, in 2006 we pretty much completed our 2G portfolio. We have a similar portfolio to the majority of European and American operators. And we started our 2.5G portfolio. At the same time, when we look at the overall market situation, we have slow subscriber growth, so we need to focus on our existing subscribers. We still have a relatively low penetration of value-added services, and we need to increase the penetration of value-added services for our existing subscribers. We still have a limited ability to control the quality of our value-added services. And the last thing, when we kind of start to move to 2007, we realize that there is no one killer application. So we need to focus on the overall portfolio. So what are our target objectives for 2007? Well, we want to be a leader in our revenues and in our efficiency, which means meeting company targets for OIBDA and our numbers. We want to lead in innovations. We want to be perceived as innovations leader among our customers. We are planning to pretty much complete a build-out of 2.5G portfolio and start rolling out 3G services. And by the end of 2007, we should have a full control of our quality from value-added services perspective. And then we move to 2008. Well, we're pretty much starting to talk about active build-out of 3G services. We are starting to talk about active promotion of conversion services. And we're starting to talk about unified promotion across the companies, across the countries and the group. Now, if we try to simplify, what's our value-added services? What do we focus on? Well, we want to lead in revenues and we want to lead in innovations. If we try to look what does it mean, VAS revenue, and what can we influence here? VAS revenue is average ARPU from VAS on number of active subscribers, a very simple formula. Now, if we look at average ARPU from VAS, it's basically VAS share in ARPU multiplied on total ARPU. Now, those two parameters, number of active subscribers and total ARPU, well, we can influence it for value-added services development. We can try to drive customers to MTS. We can try to convince customers to stay with MTS. We can try to convince customers to spend more money on communications versus, I don't know, something else like gasoline. But still, we have only limited influence over those variables comparing to other areas. Now, if we look at bus share in ARPU, well, here we have total control, and we can control it, first of all, through a number of active bus users and through frequency of value-added services usage. Now, if we focus on those two things, and we can see what can we do. For a number of active value-added services users, first of all, we need to focus on segment. We need to make sure that we have offerings to each customer, to each segment. We need to promote it this way to make sure that it's interesting for each customer and it's interesting for each segment. We need to lower entry barriers. We don't need to require customers to change their handsets. We need to make a setup of those handsets very easy. We should train customers. We should explain what services we have and what's the easiest way to use those services. Now, if we look at frequency of value-added services usage, when we are talking about availability of high-demand services. We are talking about personalized services, various loyalty and bonus programs. And, of course, we are talking about quality. And what does it mean? That means that we need to focus on our value-added services portfolio, on our value-added services assortment, and we need to focus on promotion. So from the value-added services, as we said, we need to treat it as a portfolio. And, yeah, we understand there is no killer application. We understand that there are some restrictions like stage of market maturity and what our network can provide. We'll use various filters, like we use world best practices. We look at revenue proposition for each service. We use what gives us the competitive edge. We want to be the most innovative operator. And we look at it from the segment approach, we do promotion, we analyze competitive situation, and we look at scalability. We want to be able to launch it at a large footprint. We want to launch it for every macro region and for every country. Now, that's a snapshot of kind of our view of a portfolio. And we realize that the countries in the group are at different stages of development. We have really like entry-level markets. We have markets in the stage of fast growth, and we have market at maturity. Here we're approaching them not kind of from a customer facing, but more from a technology facing side, and you see what technologies they're kind of baking on and what technologies they're going to advance. Plus, of course, there is localization here, meaning that that's pretty much 80% of the portfolio and 20% is left for every local market situation where there is a competitive situation, where are some local preferences and so on. When we talk about promotion, now we need to kind of take a customer-facing approach. So, of course, customer wouldn't see us promoting WAP as a technology. Customer will see us promoting a service like live music, which we did at the end of last year, or Cinema Club, or Portal 111, where you just can go and download content and do something like this. Customer doesn't care about technology per se. He cares about service customer can get. And here again, depending on the maturity of the market, we have either limited promotion or we promote just particular services or we just have more kind of unifying approach to promoting a number of services and promoting the vast portfolio. Vast development strategy for 2007, of course, I can't give the full roadmap, so I just have some highlights. We are going to focus on our data transport network, which is very important for such services as mobile internet, email, content downloads, and so on. We're going to focus on our SMS services and offer some new interesting things to our customers to entice them to use SMS more, to use instant messaging, and so on. We're going to focus on various enhancements in the content area. We're going to focus on quality. We're going to pay more attention to our website. From the segments approach, we have a number of services which are useful for the majority of segments, and we're kind of promoting it from the mass market perspective. Plus, there are some services which are more interesting to one segment or another. For example, you will be more interested in search capabilities on VAT versus family. At the same time, when you go move to corporate, they're more interested in us having mobile email gateway capabilities, fixed mobile conversion capabilities where you can unite your corporate PBX with mobile service, in various internet access capabilities, and so on. And now, I guess the fun part of this presentation is just some examples of our services. First service I want to bring to your attention is our VAP portal. We basically restructured it in the middle of this year, and you can see the financial results. You can see that we sold 4 million units of content for basically starting from the summer of this year. We had a 250% revenue growth. We drove pretty much 30% to our VAP traffic to our own VAP portal comparing to 10% we had before. And of course, we have areas to improve it. We are going to focus more on the personalization of VAP portal, which means that we are going to create a profile for each customer and then give him a more personalized VAP portal, a VAP portal which is kind of structured just for him. And you have just a picture, it's a snapshot with the top services from the revenue perspective, and that's not surprisingly live music, cinema club, games, and then you have comedy club, which is our sponsorship. Good Dog, which is based on Ringback Phone technology, and it's been very successful to us for this year, and we are leading, we are really leading in this area because we are the only operator who can offer it in Russia at a large footprint. All our competitors have it just in some limited areas. Plus, I mean, the great thing about this service, it's a really viral service. I have a lot of friends who call me and then ask, what music do you have? How can I get the same music? And my reaction, okay, you need to switch to MTS. Only MTS has it right now. Another one is Portal 111. It's based on USSD technology, but as I said, we don't promote USSD, we promote the portal. The interesting thing about it is it's available to everybody, and it's the first portal to unite the service function and the content function, meaning that you can switch on and on your mobile services from this portal, and at the same time you have easy access to content. We launched it in the middle of December. We made $300,000 till the end of December. We made $500,000 pretty much for first half of January, a little bit more than a half. We made a cutoff around like January 20th or something. And of course, we have development plans for this portal as well. We are going to add new services. We are going to introduce search and so on. And by the way, I have some of my employees here who will be able to demonstrate you those value-added services during lunchtime if you are interested. Well, thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you, Pavel. Thank you, all the speakers. Now we come to Q&As. There are two opportunities for you to ask your questions. You can do it either now at the general session, or you can do it later over the lunch, which management will take part as well. You can ask question now and using the microphones if you need them, and please say your name and entity you present prior to asking the question, so that all the management will know you better. Thank you, and please your question. Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. Sean Gardner from Morgan Stanley. Just in terms of your ARPU guidance for Russia for 2007, you're guiding to $8 for the full year 2007, and you're also guiding to $8 for the fourth quarter of 2006. Can you just help us understand the seasonality that you'd expect to see in 2007 versus 2006 and previous years?
Well, we expect it to be pretty much in line with the seasonalities we've seen in the previous year, which means slightly lower RPU in the fourth quarter and higher RPU in the second and third. Second and third due to a large portion of roaming revenue, which adds up to RPU and has higher marginality.
So it's sort of the guidance would then imply that your ARPU actually starts to decline potentially towards the end of next year on a year-on-year basis. Does that make sense? Because
Not necessarily. It may be. I mean, if it remains stable, it might be slightly less than $8 in the first and the fourth, and slightly higher in the second and third. So it will stay around $8 throughout the year. And for 2008, we're not giving the ARPU guidance yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Sri Sanderson from Citigroup. I think a lot of the presentation we've seen talk of or comparison to developed markets or Western European markets, Eastern European markets, and the potential that when you compare Russia to those markets, there is upside obviously on value-added services and other kind of revenue streams. To what extent, when you compare that to those markets to Russia, obviously they are postpaid predominant markets or certainly more postpaid than what Russia is, and with that comes handset subsidies. So, over what period do you envision handset subsidies coming into the Russian market?
We do not see the handset subsidies coming into the Russian market in the midterm. I mean, we don't see the immediate development like this happening. Of course, we do not exclude that this may take place, and the 3G introduction in this market is also a question, whether operators will stimulate the 3G usage by handset subsidization or not is a big question. But because the structure of the market has already been formed, when you have large dealers like Eurosets playing a very big role in handset sales, and you also have credits available, which makes phones more affordable to people, and you have operators which are specializing on developing tariff proposals, and people in their behavior typically separate the phone and the offering from the operator. So this structure is already in place, and it will be a significant shift, and the operators realize that to actually introduce the phone subsidies. And as we see, there is no essential need and immediate economic benefit from introducing the subsidies into the market. So we don't see any key reasons or drivers for that to appear anytime soon, although we don't exclude it.
I have a question on the targets. Last year, obviously, there were very clear targets from your main shareholder, from Sistema. They wanted to see the market cap to double. Are there any clear targets set to management team this year from the main shareholder?
Well, as I said last year, and I can repeat it, I can state that the situation is repeated this year. Our main target is our budget. So the budget will be adopted by the board of directors, has been already adopted by the board of directors, and it reflects the anticipation of our shareholders on what they want to us to achieve. So we don't receive targets in the market cap terms, and if we speak about real business targets, right? If we speak about the anticipations, the feelings, the desires of the shareholder, this is yes. This is what we hear on our meetings. This is what has been expressed in the press. With us, on the business level, the cooperation is much more pragmatic and practical. There is a huge setup of numbers, and we have to fulfill them.
Yes, hi, Alex Kozbeki from Innocence. You mentioned about the acquisitions, and I was just wondering, I mean, 2 years ago there was the same sort of strategy from MTS and then sort of stepped back. So I was wondering again, what has changed now? As far as I understand, the valuations of these companies have not gotten any cheaper. So again, what kind of multiples do you plan to use when looking at these acquisition targets, and where do you see the strategic fit? Thank you.
First of all, the strategic approach we have has not changed. The strategic approach we've adopted in the middle of last year when we've introduced 3+1 strategy. The strategic approach means we have to be sure financially that we can make value by making this or that acquisition. So, and
if we don't see it, we don't go for, let's say, we don't base our and our targets are, let's say, quite, let's say, short-term oriented. So it's 3 to 5 year perspective. We don't go for the businesses where potential upside can be generated in the 5 year and longer perspective. We as MTS. So we, the second task was for us to, let's say, improve, and that was actually expressed by the investors, shareholders, and analysts, that we have to settle a lot of things in our own office and to improve the effectiveness of the current operations before we return back to aggressive M&A policy. So we've concentrated our efforts at home, and I believe have achieved some results over there. That gives us more time and resources to allocate for more, I would say, precise, let's say, attention to the potential acquisition targets. And it also allowed us to elaborate what are the benefits we can, what is the value we as MTS can bring to our customers by making different types of acquisitions. And in my presentation, I've mentioned the synergies that we probably can use once we acquire any businesses outside the current MTS group. So, and I've also mentioned that if those synergies, if those reasons that we that are oriented to make value will not work with a potential target, we will not support the acquisition of the one. So we clearly identified what are the benefits we can bring to the business, and if so, and we will go for an acquisition scenario only in case those let's say those benefits will work over there. We definitely understand that CIS is our home market, and we can do much more on CIS, and we potentially can are prepared to overpay on CIS market for potential targets compared with the targets situated in other areas, because we understand that with the synergies we have, we can be more effective than a lot of other investors in the world in this market. Outside CIS, we are quite conservative. We understand that the prices since the last year hasn't, as you absolutely correctly said, Alex, has not went down. And let's say we are conservative on our perspectives of making significant acquisitions outside CIS.
Can I, sorry, this is Sergey Arsenio from Goldman Sachs. Can I just ask Gareth on, you know, on one of your slides, you had, you said that one of the reasons for ARPU improvement was the smaller number of, in Russia, was the smaller number of promotional launches in the regions in Russia. Can you tell, or can you quantify this, at least, you know, in approximate terms, what was the percentage of regions on promotional launches in 2006? And what is your expectations for 2007?
Okay, I can't give you exact numbers. I just don't have them to hand. But what I can tell you is that what you're talking about is just a symptom of part of our strategy. As I mentioned earlier, our strategy is based firstly, secondly, and thirdly on customer insight. Our customer insight is that the Russian customer is exactly the same in Vladivostok as he is in Voronezh, by segment, obviously. The way that the Russian market was organized previously meant that all of the operators were doing, you know, all of their tariff plans with some kind of regional adaptation in each of the regions. So if you take the number of regions and number of standard products, and you said each region had its own variation, not just in terms of the price, which we will maintain for revenue optimization purposes, but also in terms of the, you know, the promotion strategy, the product features, and so on. Because these things were decided regionally, yes. It turned out that you had, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of offers, but they, if you looked at them kind of from a macro perspective, they didn't differ very much from each other. And when you looked at it from the customer perspective, the customers didn't differ at all. So I think this is also happening to maybe a lesser extent, the other two operators, is that, you know, there's a gradual move towards federal offers, which by definition will take away much of the large number of regional special offers. And the regional offers you'll get now will be, you know, price variations on a single national theme. Okay, so that's one driver for it. The second driver is that we believe that customers are much more attracted by offers which are simple and permanent, as opposed to saying, you know, 99 kopecks for the next 17 and a half minutes, and after that it's 2 rubles a minute. You know, people don't respond to that in the way that they used to when the market was in acquisition mode and the penetration levels were low. So it's also a reflection of a gradually maturing market and our mature response to that gradually maturing market. In terms of numbers, what I can say is that the number of regional promotions declined in 2006 with respect to 2005. Is that public information? You know, several folds. I can't give you the exact number, but several folds. And we will see a further reduction in the number of those promotions in 2007 versus 2006.
But presumably a lot of these promotions were driven by your launches. You know, when you launch in a new region, you come into the region with
That is correct, but there are very few new regions left. I mean, if I look at Russia, where is left that's significant? Chechnya, Pinda, a couple of places. But, you know, that's not going to make a material difference to the number of, to the fact that we're going to decline the relative number of regional promotions and increase the focus on federal activity.
No, for sure. But, you know, some of them.
Okay, we'll talk about this later.
That's fine. Let's take it offline.
All right. Thanks.
Konstantin Chernyshov, Euroseed. What's your view on the 3G networks in Russia? And do we really need it?
Do we need it?
Yeah.
Well, we are finalizing our business plan on 3G. In order to tell you more particular what will be our capex for 3G, we hope that during the Q1 disclosure, probably we'll be able to tell the numbers of our capex for 3G, and I assure you that those investments would be business plan driven and let's say ROIC proven. We understand there are two reasons why we how we can return back the investments for 3G. One reason is the consumption of the new services that can be delivered to the customers via 3G. This is mainly internet-linked, web-linked data services, because with the voice, actually, as you understand or hardly can do any significant improvements. And the other area is cost reduction on equipment, especially on commutation capacity linked equipment, because the 3G equipment is much more cost saving for us now than the 2G solutions. That's why once the percentage of handsets in a concrete territory, handsets, 3G handsets penetration would be higher than a concrete level, like saying 40%, for example, then it would be a great saving for the company to generate the 3G network, rather than to proceed development of the capacity via 2G. So our scenarios are based on these two, let's say, revenue sources. And we believe that it will be positive. NPV and NPV positive scenario, it will be a reasonable investment for our investors, and we'll be very concretely working at installation of the 3G in the areas where the consumption where these two factors will work. Okay.
Olga Bystrova, Credit Suisse. If when you talk about ARPU, you compare that, you mentioned several times the disparity in Russia and other developed countries. I mean, in addition to let's say, income levels. Do you see any structural differences why this disparity should be permanent, let's say? And if not, what would be, in your view, or maybe you thought about it, the tangible factors that would drive the convergence of usage, and maybe what the business model of this would be in terms of pricing, costs, cost structure associated with it? Thank you.
Is it a question two?
I think right, but...
Right. Well, one big, you know, I don't want to send everybody to sleep, and lunch is coming, so you know, I'll try to stick to the main structural factors. And the biggest structural factor is the shift from prepaid to postpaid, so effortless consumption. There is, for all three operators in the market, there are a large number of people at any given time. Let's take the guy who's drunk, 3 o'clock in the morning in his apartment, talking to his girlfriend, runs out of credit. He's on the 13th floor, it's cold, so he didn't bother to top up. So there are, you know, many, many millions of dollars of lost opportunities in terms of calls or, you know, revenue-specific business that never actually takes place because the guy has to, and doesn't want to, get in the lift, go downstairs and look for the kiosk so that he can top up. And we have many initiatives, which I can bore you with offline rather than online, to tackle that and to turn that challenge into an opportunity for us. But that's one big structural shift. The more that people shift to postpaid, the higher traffic levels that you're going to see. Another structural shift is, I refer to it in my own presentation, I call it the economies of scope, and I refer to the fact that, you know, the vast majority of Russians walking around with mobile phones in their pockets have not had them for very long. And I would say, excuse me if it sounds amateurish to say so, but I don't think they've really learned how to use those phones yet. And the dependency culture, although it's growing, is not yet there. So the more, and CPP is a big thing here, because all those hundreds and millions of unemployed labourers who have incomes of, you know, $50, $100 a month at best, you know, they are now part of the addressable market. They're people that you can call. And as they are called, as any good pharmaceutical marketing executive will tell you, they will also start to develop a dependency and they'll start to make outgoing calls. So the number of people who call and are called regularly will increase. And that economy of scope is going to drive the market for all three operators, which is why I would say in any market, you know, particularly if it's a growing market, okay, here we have primary saturation in terms of SIM cards. But, you know, 4 years ago, I would have said, you know, the best news for any operator is that I've just added a customer. The second best news is that the competitor has added a customer, because 30% of that revenue is going to come to me anyway. And maybe I can then snaffle him later and bring him over to my network, you know, for a whole range of good reasons. So those economies of scope are going to drive the market as well significantly. That's another structural change that's going to happen. I think the third thing is the feel-good factor in the provinces. One interesting statistic that you may or may not have noticed in the analyst community is the Russian birth rate. The Russian birth rate is now 10.4 live births per 1,000, I think. 10.4 anyway, on the internationally accepted average. And there's a massive sense of consumer optimism. We feel it, not through our lag indicators yet, but we can feel it through our lead indicators. You know, the furthest reaches, or the furthest outside reaches of our research curves are all pointing up in terms of, you know, national good feeling. And although that's probably not a structural thing, insofar as that it's not directly impactable by structural reforms or impediments or, you know, whatever, it's there. And that combined with the fact that real incomes are rising anyway and a very low tax rate, even lower in effective terms, is going to drive that traffic disproportionately. So I would foresee a relatively rapid convergence to Western European use or Central European usage levels. And that's going to happen, as Michael pointed out, my colleague, you know, with or without subsidized telephones, because, you know, the subsidy culture in the West came out 1992 in the UK. You wanted to buy a phone, it was £850 to buy a phone. You know, that was what I earned in a month in 1992. So I needed a credit. Here in Russia, you know, they've sorted microcredit Bangladeshi style. They've got it down to a fine art. You know, the phone, the actual acquisition cost of the phone is not that much. So I don't see the disappearance of the subsidy culture or the appearance of the subsidy culture as being a structural enabler. But definitely the wide access to some kind of basic credit scoring, credit histories, where we also, as the mobile operators, can help, is going to ease the entry barriers to ever higher consumption. But basically, the structural factors are the ones I've just mentioned. I hope that answers your question. Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do. Do you mean the price elasticity of demand or of supply? Of usage. Yes, I think it will play a big role. But the price elasticity, we're being very scientific here, and I'm a marketing guy, so I first talk from the customer's point of view always. From the customer's point of view, the key word to remember, in fact, if you walk out of here with one word, it's affordability. It's perceived affordability. The idea that I can afford to, you know, socialize freely on my mobile phone, whether it's internet, texting, you know, technology agnostic, whatever it is, whatever the guy likes to do, but the feeling of affordability. And that feeling of affordability, if we have, you know, if we have one thing that we, in the consumer markets, that we need to set ourselves as a goal, all operators, because it benefits all of us in the end, it's perceived affordability for the customer. And that affordability, in turn, translates into accessibility, simplicity, understandability, the price level itself, and how you pitch the price level. Because for a young person, it may be more efficient to have really cheap text, even if the voice costs a lot. You know, for a pensioner, it may be efficient to have a favourite number, which is a landline number, so she can call her daughter and say, "I'm still alive," and everything else costs zero. You know, so it doesn't necessarily mean dropping prices across the board. And the beauty of segmentation, if you do it the right way, means that you can really, you know, get crystal clear focus on how you translate affordability into increased usage and increased revenues without cutting your margins.
Надежда Голубева, Атон. You mentioned that you see opportunities in managing interconnect costs. So could you a little bit clarify this? Because as I understand, a large part of this cost is beyond your control. So do you believe that there could be some improvements on the regulatory front? Or are you talking about some sort of volume discounts?
We believe that we do not mention the interconnect tariff, which is you are right. We have quite a limited sort of power to control. However, as we've seen in Ukraine last year, 2006, one of the key reasons for major reasons to improve OIBDA margin in Ukraine over Q2 and Q3 specifically was a better balancing of the traffic and stimulating on that traffic. So we actually changed the balance of traffic there, increasing share of on that traffic. So basically, this is the approach we're also using now in Uzbekistan, and we are developing the strategy in Russia as well. So that was what was meant by the managing the interconnect costs.
Yeah, and we have opportunities in Russia now regarding changing of the distribution of the calls from fixed to mobile and mobile on mobile and on network, because, as you know, for example, in Moscow, the MGTS changes, the Moscow fixed line monopolist changes the tariff plans, and it creates some room for our initiatives to improve the amount, to increase the amount of mobile users and mobile traffic, mobile-to-mobile traffic, different to what it has been before. And on top of that, there are some opportunities in our pricing, let's say, initiatives regarding the mobile operators. The influence of, still the influence of state there is, from another hand, quite limited, and we have understanding that there could be some further increases of interconnect charges between mobile operators. Though the anti-monopoly service would like to have a look at these developments.
Елена Баженова from MDM Bank. Question probably to also to Garrett regarding, you mentioned fixing the new exchange rates in this year, but since you moved to ruble-denominated tariffs, does it mean that you still use dollar-denominated tariffs and then apply new exchange rate? Does it mean that you will raise your ruble tariff, and is fixing new exchange rate will be the only source of your ruble nominated tariffs to go up, and also would you provide usage growth base, just roughly, and in other words, what is going to be key source for ARPU growth, if you can break down a contribution of tariffs and usage?
I think I'll pass part of that question to Sevalod on the financial side. Sevalod, do you want to comment first, maybe, and I'll come back then to ARPU?
Well, basically, speaking about our tariff policy, what has happened is that we switched from dollar nominated tariffs with the fixed exchange rate to ruble nominated tariffs starting beginning of January. So all tariffs in the mass market, in the prepaid mass market, are now ruble-based and ruble-nominated. So that this is to answer the first part of your question. And speaking about the contribution to the revenue, as we discussed, to the ARPU, key factors which are influencing the ARPU is basically in Russia. It's MOU growth, which we're stimulating via various tariff plans and initiatives which were described by the Mikhail and Gareth, and further APPM decline, which we believe will happen, will take place in Russia in the year 2007. However, we do not see this as a major drop. We expect this to be single digits, maybe high single digit numbers, which will lead to overall ARPU increase of mid to high single digit numbers.
Stanislav Yudin from Securities. You said you are going to apply for 3G license, and system also has potential national 3G operator Skylink. In this regard, do you see Skylink as a partner or like a competitor, to, or do you see potential cooperation with the company in order to avoid market erosion, etc.?
Well, we have received a very concrete supportive messages from Sistema on the topic of our own participation in the 3G license tender, and I have the only understanding that our controlling stakeholder would like us to be one of the winners of the tender, and I don't consider any special cooperation program in UMTS with Skylink for the time being.
Dalibor Babruska, ING. Just two quick questions. One is on the ARPUs. I don't remember exactly the history, but there's a chart in the marketing presentation, I think from Garrett, which shows some kind of fourth quarter 06 ARPUs. I just wanted to check whether that is the numbers that, because it shows it's monthly numbers, but it looks like around $7 or so. So I'm just wondering how much attention we should pay to these numbers. And the second question is on pricing. Essentially, it seems that the market is behaving in a more reasonable way, or competitors are behaving in a more rational way now. What do you think are the main risks to this situation in this year? Do you think it might come from one of the competitors perhaps changing their strategy, becoming more aggressive? Or is there any regulatory issues that perhaps the regulators are going to look at the margins and say, oh, this is too high, we need to look at interconnect again? What do you think are the main risks in pricing? Thank you.
I will try to handle the first question. The guidance for year 2006 was more than $7.6 ARPU. The chart which was in the GAR presentation is absolutely correct, but the numbers for the Q4 are indicative only because we didn't have any results for revenue yet. So
there are estimates here.
This is more or less to show you the trend rather than concrete figures.
Okay.
Well, regarding the pricing, we have placed our strategy on the in our business plan for 2007 based on the assumption that the pricing discipline would be on the markets in order, and the policy of all three competitors will be more or less the same like it was in the second part of the year 2006. It does mean that from region to region there are aggressive players and less aggressive players. It does mean that the third operator, Megafon, is in general terms price-wise more aggressive than the first and the second operator. And we believe it's going to stay like this in the this year. What I really believe is that the results of 3G tender will influence the behavior of the players. So those ones who will win the tender will be more price-wise more strict and disciplined, because they will need to by their revenues in both in 2.5 and 3G technology services, they will have to return back much higher investments done by the investors to finance on top of 2 and 2.5G, 3G. If there will be one of the operators among the three main players who will not receive the 3G license, we can anticipate a very aggressive pricing move from this competitor on the traditional services.
And the last question, please, and we will move all the questions further to the dining room. Len, please.
Yelena Rogovina, UBS. Two small questions, if I may. My first one is, do you expect any revisions in fixed mobile termination rates in 2007? And my second question is on MVNOs. Some companies like Eurosat, for example, state their intentions to launch MVNOs shortly. Would you give them an access to your network, and do you consider this to be a potential threat to the market shares? Thanks.
If to speak about fixed mobile rates, we will do our best to influence the increase, same as we'll do our best to increase the interconnect charges, because we believe these charges and these prices now are below the cost. And we have good arguments to the authorities why they should be increased. As I mentioned, the mobile-to-mobile costs are not now, let's say, regulated by the state, but as you know, Anti-Monopoly Service tries to influence it, and fixed-to-mobile is regulated, and we would like to address the authority with the requirement to increase it. The problem on this will be the general ARPU growth. So if the state authorities recognize people pay more to us and our incomes grow, they become politically hesitant to increase our revenues from other sources, right, especially from fixed to mobile. So you understand the game, the political choice that will, let's say, be that will be in front of the authorities here. MVNOs, we believe that there will be some aggressive institutions trying to get the licenses for MVNO and to change the regulations to allow MVNO to, let's say, to be launched in the Russian Federation. It's also the result of the very low margins dealers have in their own business, and that has been many times stated by the owners of Eurosat, for example, that they have to do something with its margins, and to launch a new business would be a good, solution to improve the effectiveness of their own business. We don't recognize the necessity for a customer for a new MVNO proposal, at least on the market of 2G, and we can understand that we can create some, especially on the initial years of 3G, some extra capacity to fill the one probably would be some room for like MVNO players, but this is from our viewpoint not yet proper time to talk on. So we understand there will be pressure. We have our counter-arguments. And I don't think this year will be the year of the launch of the MVNOs in Russia.
and very last. Nice.
Thank you. It's a kind of clarification. You guide for about 5% growth in Russian ARPU on your slide from 6, and at the same time you guide for 15-17 growth in revenues in Russia. What is the remaining growth coming from? And I mean, just the break, if it's possible. And just could you repeat, please, that you expect about 3% in improvement in underlying EBITDA profitability due to the cost-cutting programs? Did I understand you correctly? Thank you.
I will start with the second question. I think Mikhail will address the first one. The 3% EBITDA margin is a number to give you the flavor of the potential downside from the cost pressure, which we aim to offset by the business optimization. So it's not. So we believe that these efforts will enable us to maintain the 50% EBITDA margin target for year 2007.
The difference between the 5% and the 15% is explained by two factors. One major one is reduction in churn, and the second one is new customer acquisition.